per sempre non so come vivere. E
l'allegria, amico mio, va via con te.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and this is time for another episode of The Awakening of the Self. This is for Monday, every Monday from 6 to 8, and this has to do with the conscious awakening of the real self. Buddha, 2,500 years ago, spoke about another self that was the small self, with a small s. And he let us know that this self was only was illusionary, mocked up from our mental projections and thoughts, and it's not our real self. And while it does last for a while and might be okay for a while, after a while, the small self gets claustrophobic and stuffy. And we need to move out of that and into our real self, our more creative self. As we move into this pure consciousness self, we start to imbibe the qualities of freedom, peace, love, harmony, compassion, or indeed all the good qualities that man has ever sought. They're already there, but we just have to awaken them. And we do this over the radio by giving you out some exercise, spiritual exercises. These come from a long tradition of Vedanta in the East. It's also called, in the West, it's called the exercise of self-inquiry. My name is Dr. Mike. I'm an MD and a naturopath and a teacher of meditation for a good number of years. You can indeed phone into this program at any time during the program. You can interrupt anything that's going on. If you have any questions centered around spirituality or knowing yourself. We also have an email here, which is frsc@freakradio.org. I haven't started using the email yet, but I intend to in the near future. We have a slogan here, and we'd like the mind to be absorbed in the heart. May the mind fall into the heart. May the mind be absorbed in the state of beingness. May the mind be absorbed in the state of wakeful alertness. As always, a radio program or reading a book on spirituality is only a signpost pointing the way. It's not actually the experience itself. In order to progress into the real experience, you need to adopt the exercises that we give out in this program, and also the guided meditation that we do here. So they're the two most important things on this program. And I usually ring a little bell to remind you when those exercises come up. All right, so that music was Jackie Ivanko and Josh Gobran, and it was called Me Manchere. And so we now we will move on. We have Jackie Ivanko as our guest tonight, so we move on to her next song. It's going to be The Prayer. And she's going to sing this with somebody called Jess Page. I don't know him personally, but anyway. Jackie Ivanko and Joss Page.
Towards the sun. thank you for being in your presence.
Okay.
There's no question. There's a recognition. I have any want? No want, no wish, nothing.
Yes.
So almost my brain feels like Alzheimer. There's nothing in there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel happy.
Yes. The world doesn't understand this type of happiness. She didn't come to tell me I got a new car and just moving into a new house. Just started a fresh relationship, nothing like that. I have no questions. I have no desires, somehow. My mind is empty of intention. It's not swimming around in the past. It's not swimming towards some future. I just am like this. I'm content, happy. The world does not teach you, listen, be like that. No, 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 no. What are you doing with your life? What are you doing with your life? They'd rather sometimes, even the people that love you, they'd rather you be doing something and not be happy doing it than to be doing nothing and be happy. You understand? Nothingness is a taboo in the world. Emptiness is taboo and it's screwing up everybody. Because you have to be something. You have to become something. Then they may stick a badge on you, give you a piece of paper with a little ribbon on it. And you feel happy. Oh. I've got my paper with a ribbon. Very nice. Look. You see? Spend the rest of your life showing people photo albums of yourself when you're sitting right there. Not in real tune and time with the universal being. Now someone is content. I don't have any aspiration. No? So in the world they'll say you're pretty much useless. Yeah, useless. You have nothing to contribute to us. Happiness we don't want. To see a happy person we don't want, no. Hard working we want. Happy person we don't need. You have no use to us being happy. We rather you are miserable and a hard worker. But to be peaceful and happy, you are useless for us. Content. Have you paid your taxes? Why should you be content? Nobody wants you to be content. Open. Open for what? Business? No, not business. Open to nothingness. What? Which psychiatric unit are you in? So nobody's going to tell you for this. And if you listen to the world, look for them for approval, you will not know any happiness. Sometimes you have to go even sometimes against your own family because they are not awake to the virtues of life. We put in front of us, we venerate objects, certificates, and conditioning to be accepted by a world of conditioning. And they don't have a value of your own happiness. That's not everybody like that, but many is like this. To be content, you see. And they have to spend a little time with you to begin to have the eyes open a little bit to the vastness of your kingdom. They will not know you over the counter. Hello, how are you? Happy? Oh yes, very good, happy for you. Okay, bye-bye. Okay? They will not appreciate, they cannot know your freedom. Only as you come into your own Buddha nature, it will penetrate all defenses, depending upon your destiny. Someone will not have any intention. They may even not, they even prepare to not like you. And then they come into the orbit of your presence, poof, finish. You see? But on the way to your own self-discovering, at this, most people still in the momentum of judgment and of anxiety, insecurity, and self-defensiveness, so they will not see you if a thief comes, walks past, or meets a holy person, he will only notice his pockets. What you value, that you will see. You see? And it will take time and openness for someone to see someone whose heart is beating in the truth. So don't look for praise and acceptance from the world. Don't seek it, period. Even from the Sangha, don't seek it. Be it. Be comfortable with your own comfort, your own peace. Don't be complacent. Don't be demonstrative. Just be yourself, you see. Who is the one who says, I have no more questions again? We started like that. I have no more questions. The one who has come to rest, whose life is rest, resting in peace. Where do you go to find living beings in that state, resting in peace? You have to go to the cemetery. In the cemetery, you see, rest in peace. And it's not even true, even. Even sometimes the dead are not resting in peace. They're still running about as ghosts around the place. Where will you find that one who is resting in peace, you see? The one who has found their true nature, resting in peace. All questions are consumed, burnt up. Where do you stand? Where do you place your identity? Silence cannot be understood. Truth cannot be understood. It can only be experienced. We vastly overrate our mental abilities. Like the truth should appear to your mind, appeal to your mind. Then we don't realize how much deeper you are than merely your conditioned mind. Natural mind and the pure self is the same thing. Don't be afraid of emptiness. Get used to it. There's a fear inside many people that if they become empty, it means you become stupid. I want to remove this taboo, this fear from you. If you become empty, you become stupid, you won't know anything. And it's true. A sage doesn't know anything, actually. Not like the way that we think. We think that to know something in the traditional sense is to have a knowledge, and this knowledge provides a kind of safety net for you. So you don't know the one who knows nothing, and yet is everything. The knowledge you have saved up cannot compare with the knowledge that sprouts spontaneously out of your being. And it is always appropriate, always on target, because it is not personal, you see. Very good. Thank you.
to a point in the show now where I'd like to do something even more fun than it already has been. So, I would like to bring on the stage someone very, very special. This person has been with me through thick and thin and has cheered me on from the sidelines since the beginning. Please welcome my big brother, Jacob Ivanko.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be.
Okay, that was Jackie Ivanko and her older brother by 1 year, I think. Forgotten his name now, but anyway, they're just really kids. But they're good singers, and I know the quality of the recording wasn't probably the best, but sometimes I don't know that till I actually start playing it. Okay, so now we're going to play, we're going to go the master, Rupert Spira. How do I know consciousness is universal, infinite, and unlimited? That's the name of the talk.
What I'm not grasping or not understanding, and perhaps the problem is that I'm coming from my mind, or it is the problem, I'm coming from my mind, but my mind wants to know. The sense of awareness not being limited. My experience is that I don't know or I don't experience, I'm not aware of what's happening outside of this room. And I've been told there's 7 million people on the planet. I don't understand or I'm not aware of what's going on in their experience. So to me, awareness feels limited. I don't know if there's a dinosaur on the outside of this building. I feel restricted by my senses. So I understand the dimensionlessness, the lack of reality of time and space, but the limitedness I don't understand.
Visualize your kitchen at home. Can you see what's going on in it? Does that imply that the space in your kitchen is separate from the space in this room?
Yes.
Does it? How many spaces are there in the universe?
An infinite number of spaces.
Just think about that again.
That's why I didn't want to ask a question. So I just thought of all the mouse holes in the world.
Yeah, okay. Think of all the little, the rooms and the cavities. And are they all self-contained, sealed units of space, separate from one another?
No.
Imagine the space of this room, yeah? Before this building was built. Okay, imagine just this little portion of space, yeah, before the building was put up. Now, when the building was put up, the space was completely one with all the rest of the space in the universe, yeah. When the building was put up, what happened to the space in this room?
Nothing.
And when the building is taken down, what will happen to it?
Nothing.
Exactly. So consciousness is like the space in this room. It seems to be contained in the body-mind. It seems to share the limits of the body-mind, just like the space in this room seems to share the space of the walls. When the walls of this building are taken down, the space inside it won't suddenly reunite with the space in the rest of the universe. There's only ever been one space in the universe. The fact that you now can't see what is taking place in your kitchen doesn't imply that the space in your kitchen is a separate space from this space here. They have always been and will always be the same space. Why couldn't it be like that with consciousness? Why couldn't the consciousness in which your thoughts appear and the consciousness in which my thoughts appear be the same consciousness? And just like the space in which your kitchen table appears and the space in which this table appears is this, relatively speaking, it's the same space.
So then what I'm trying to wrap my understanding around is that just because I don't know the contents or I'm not aware of the contents of someone else's experience.
Yes.
That doesn't mean there's a limit to awareness. It's a limit of my senses, my mind.
Everything you know with your mind, whether it's your own knowledge or somebody else's knowledge which you don't know, but whatever you do, whatever you know with your mind is limited. Even the knowledge that you do know, let alone the knowledge that you don't know. Yes? Whatever you know is limited. What does that tell us about the knowing with which that knowledge is known? Everything you know is illuminated or lit up by awareness. It's known by awareness, yes? And everything that you know is limited. But what about that which knows it? Why do you think that that which knows our experience shares the limits of the known? What is there in your experience to suggest that that which knows your experience shares the limits of that which you know, of the known object or thought or perception.
I think it's just habit.
It's habit. The only reason we think like that is because we've been taught by our culture to think like that. That's what all our teachers and parents and most of them, our culture, think. We've just been taught to think that, and we've never stopped to check it out for ourselves. We very rarely, of course, everybody here has now stopped to check it out for themselves. That's why we're here. But most people never even notice, wow, there is something that is aware of my experience. I have thoughts, sensations, and perceptions, but something is aware of that. Wow, what is that? Most people never even have that thought. Our experience is illuminated by consciousness, is known by consciousness, appears in consciousness, and yet our culture systematically ignores the presence of consciousness. I mean, it's hard, once it has become obvious to us, as it has to all of us here, that there is something which knows our experience, it's almost impossible to understand how it could have been overlooked. I remember when it first dawned on me, something is aware of my experience. I remember that this feeling of outrage that I wasn't told this when I was 5 years old. Why did they teach me about maths and English and all those kings and queens and all the battles and all? Why did they fill my mind full of these objects? No, never once. I was educated in the best schools in England. Never once did anybody say to me, have you ever noticed that something is aware of your experience? I live in Oxford now, and I hold meetings once a month there. To my knowledge, only one person has ever walked out of one of my meetings. I'm sure other people have, but they do it. They kind of slip out. when I'm talking to someone over here, when I turn around, I notice a few empty seats over there. But most people very politely leave. But to my knowledge, only one person has ever stood up and walked out of a meeting. It was a philosophy student from Oxford University. Oxford University, that's like Harvard or Yale. It's one of the top educational institutions in the world. And this was a philosophy student. In other words, this was someone who was interested in the nature of reality. He was so outraged by what was being suggested. And I was going quite gently. He couldn't even wait till the end of the meeting. He just got up with this kind of mild look. I didn't know he was a philosophy student at the time. One of the people at the end of the meeting told me. But he just got up with this kind of barely concealed look of disdain and walked out. What are they teaching him in the philosophy department at Oxford? What do you think he's learning? Yeah, you're right. It's just a habit. It's just because we've been taught focus on objects, focus on objects, focus on objects. And if you're not focusing on objects, there's something wrong with you. You're boring. You're stupid. You're not normal. You're dreamy. You're etc., etc. I have a 14, nearly 15-year-old son who's, you know, going through the conventional educational system in England, and he comes back and he's not remotely interested in his work. He's interested in his friends and football, and girls are just beginning to appear on the horizon, and he couldn't care less about history and all that. But he comes home and he has to do these his prep and everything, and I find myself encouraging him to do his prep. Saying, sorry, no, you can't watch the European semi-finals until your prep's finished. You've got to finish your history first. You've got to do your essay or whatever it is. I find myself encouraging him to do it because he's in that system. But half of me is feeling, oh, my heart's not in this. Just have the courage to stick to your experience. Don't stick to what I'm saying. I recommend you don't believe anything I say any more than you believe your previous teachers in school. I'm not just saying that. I mean that. All I'm trying to do is to provoke in you this interest in the nature of your experience. How come my experience is known? I mean, isn't that amazing? Our experience is known. I mean, forget walking on water or raising the dead or anything. Experience is known. That's incredible. There is experience. How come? What knows it? What knows our thoughts? What is it that is hearing these sounds? It's all lit up by a light, not a physical light, but a knowing light. And that knowing light has remained present throughout our lives. The little infant, when it's born, it's the bright lights that it sees, that the physical sensations, the sound, they're all known. This awareness is pristine, fully formed at birth. It doesn't develop, it doesn't grow. It's just fully there, present in all experience. It hasn't evolved. It's just always fully formed, pristine, on. It's always on. It doesn't have an off button or a dimmer switch. Isn't that amazing? What could be more interesting? What could be more interesting than to know the nature of that which knows our experience? What could trump that? What could capture our interest more than to know the nature of that which knows our entire experience? When that interest gets awakened in us and we begin to notice this knowing, to notice this consciousness that illuminates our experience, this interest, it grows and it deepens and it grows into this love to know the nature of this knowing. This is where the path of jnana and the path of bhakti are really the same path. It's not just, we're not just casually interested. It becomes this passionate love affair. We love to know the nature of what it is that illuminates or makes real our experience. And people... You know, people sometimes talk about their spiritual practice and their discipline as if it was the most terrible chore that they have to do. It should be the most interesting, enjoyable, fun, exciting adventure you could possibly imagine. And if it's not the most interesting thing you could imagine doing, then I would recommend that you... I'm not talking to you personally now, I'm speaking in general, that you go and do whatever else is more interesting. In other words, we should just be here simply because of all the places on earth. And of all the things we could be doing, this is what we want to be doing more than anything else, because it's so interesting and enjoyable.
What I'm not grasping or not understanding, and perhaps the problem is that I'm coming from my mind, or it is the problem, I'm coming from my mind, but my mind wants to know. The sense of awareness not being limited.
Okay, that was Master Rupert Spira. He had some subtle thoughts there, subtle awarenesses. And one of the things that is of interest is that even though we all have different patterns of thinking and different thoughts, the consciousness that's experiencing life or all these thoughts is the same consciousness that flows through everything animate and even inanimate, the same consciousness. That's the oneness of life in its many different forms. All right, well, we'll move on now to some music. And we have Josh Gobran lined up here. And he's going to sing Per Te. If I can get my computer to open. Okay, I think it's coming.
I vissuti con me, ora lo so, non voglio perderti. Quella dolcezza così senza età, la tua bellezza rivali non ha. Il cuore mio vuole soltanto te, per te vivrò, l'amore vincerà, con te avrò. Questo non finirà mai senza di te. Non voglio esistere per te vivrò, l'amore vincerà. Con te. Senza di te.
Oh.
Dutch Oscar Brown. Perte is the name of the song. You know, the essence of our existence, the essence of our beingness, being, is consciousness. And if you have time to think about that sometime when you're in your quieter moments, you'll find that consciousness is outside time and space. And you can be led to that. You don't have to read it in a book or hear or be told by anyone. You can be led to that conclusion by the guided meditations that we do on this program. But again, you have to do them to be able to come to that direct experience. And consciousness is not anything. You cannot put it under a microscope. It has no qualities. It's not green, blue, red, smelly, whatever. But it has no consciousness. But it's a pure experience, a pristine experience. And in its pristine form, it's the same basically for everyone. It's an inner experience of pure freedom, pure consciousness, pure love. Same for everybody when they get to that level of pristine consciousness. Okay, well, it's time now to go back to one of the spiritual masters. This time we're going to have Eckhart Tolle, and he's going to, the name of his talk is the state of presence devoid of emotional content?
You're describing a state in which there's no mental or emotional content, and yet I experience emotions in presence, perhaps sadness when something happens that is difficult for another person, or at the news of the death of someone I love, and I experience that emotion happening in present time. Isn't it possible for emotional experiences to arise in presence? Yes, you can have presence while the emotions are happening, or while thoughts are happening. It means you're not totally lost in, totally identified with, totally drawn into the emotion or the thought. There is in the background a space of awareness, that in the foreground there may be anger, sadness, and you're not totally lost in it. There's a space for it that you still sense, and you are essentially not the emotion, you're the awareness behind the emotion. You know that this emotion is there. The same thing can happen when the mind is active. You can talk, and the mind can completely take over, and you become lost in your mind in a stream, either a stream of thinking or a stream of speaking. You can observe it. If you can't yet observe the mind stream in yourself, you can occasionally just quietly observe people talking to each other, and especially people who are having a discussion. Because when they're having a usually discussion or disagreeing about something, there is not only the mind, there's also an emotion that goes with the mind stream. That's the disagreement. Why is there an emotion when people are having a discussion and they disagree? Why is there an emotion that goes with their mental positions? Well, because they're identified with the mental position. That identify means their sense of self has become one with the thought. The consciousness, the I, has identified with the form, rather than realizing that it is formless in essence. It has lost that knowledge, so consciousness is in a dreamlike state, could say. Consciousness identifies with I, with the form, and so there is a self-identification with the mental position or thought, which means anybody who questions or doubts or contradicts this mental position or thought is unconsciously regarded by the self-identified thought structure, which you have become, the ego is part of ego. Anybody who disagrees, contradicts, doubts, is unconsciously, not in so many words, but unconsciously regarded as an enemy. Because you are threatening, it's a delusion, but there's an unconscious belief that the other person is threatening my very being, because the person is threatening my mental position with which I have identified. So you can, it's a very deeply unconscious process, and it requires quite an alertness to see it in the moment that it happens in yourself. But perhaps next time somebody comes to you and you're having a kind of a disagreement about something, and suddenly you can feel an influx as you defend your position or contradict the other person or justify something. Feel the emotion that flows into what you say. It will be some kind of either aggressive or defensive emotion that goes with it, either some fear or some aggression. If you can be aware of that at that moment and realize what is happening, that you have identified with something in your mind, believing that that is you, believing your very existence is threatened by somebody contradicting you. It's unconscious. That's why people get aggressive and negative energy flows the moment somebody contradicts you. It just means somebody has a different opinion. But the ego can't allow a different opinion because the ego feels its existence is threatened by a different opinion, because ego is identification with thought and a mental position. This is on a personal level. This can become an entire war between nations, the similar pattern. So you can, at first you can see it. Let's say you're observing two people having a discussion, and of course, let's say you are not involved, then it's easier for you to see that process at work and realize that usually both of them become drawn into a very negative confrontation simply because they hold different opinions. But for them it's more than an opinion. It's their very self that's threatened. It's an illusion, but that's how it is perceived. So it's very fundamental and very basic to the huge amount of conflict that arises in human interactions. And it's basically so simple that it's just quite incomprehensible that people haven't realized by now that this is how it works. And so, but the pattern is so deep-seated that even people who are engaged in spiritual work for years still get drawn into that. When their mental position is threatened, no matter how much spirituality, there they are, defending their very existence. Because the pattern is very deep. So alertness is required. If you don't want to carry on in that way for the rest of your life and be part of that, madness ultimately, dysfunction ultimately, because it creates continuous conflict and negative feelings and so on, and interferes with the true relationship with another human being. Be aware in yourself of this process when and as it happens. And for that you have to wait until the moment comes when somebody contradicts you or says, no, you're not right, or I don't agree, or whatever they say. And then you have to be alert. What is it that comes up and wants to defeat the other or protect itself? So that is a vital thing, but presence is required. The pattern is deep, very deep-seated. Without the presence, each time, every time, it will take you over, and you'll be lost. So, alertness, I can't remember what the question was, but this is vital. Ah, yes. Sometimes when I hear you talk about presence, it seems like you're describing a state in which there's no mental or emotional content, and yet I experience emotions in presence. So, we've been talking now just about experiencing the absence of presence, and there's a mental emotional stream that comes up. You can do it to yourself also. You can have a discussion with yourself. You can doubt yourself. You can have an argument with yourself. You can have one part of your mind accusing another part of your mind of being lazy, for example, or of being not good enough. And then you can have a similar argument with one part of your mind splits itself in two and says, you should know better by now. You should do better. Why did you do this? You did it. Well, I couldn't help it. No presence. So, yes, there can be presence when there are thoughts and emotions, and it is vital that there should be presence in the background, which means just you're aware that certain emotions are coming through you, and you are not the emotion, but you're the awareness. You're aware that certain thoughts are there, you're aware that you have an opinion, you're aware that you're voicing your opinion. That's fine. But you are not in the opinion. Your sense of self isn't in the opinion. Your sense of self is the awareness. And then you can express an opinion and you can say, the universe is, in essence, consciousness. And then the other person says, that's a load of rubbish. Or whatever they say, mumbo jumbo, you are talking mumbo jumbo. Where's the, show me the consciousness, or whatever the flat footed materialist is saying to you. And then observe, see whether you actually know that you, the universe, which means you, ultimately comes down to you, as this is the where you experience the universe as yourself. Do you know that the universe is consciousness, or do you just believe that the universe, at that moment, are you the consciousness or are you the belief that you are conscious? If you are the belief, then you are the thought, and then you'll be defending yourself. So you'll be shouting back at the other person that they are narrow-minded bigots. Or there is an awareness in the background, and then you say the universe is consciousness, the other person says a load of rubbish, then you say, well, I'm sure in your perception that's the universe is not consciousness, so that's fine. Why should you believe that the universe, if that's not within your reality? Fine, you are entitled to believing that the universe is a soup of chemicals. That's fine, that's your reality, it's perfectly... I'm perfectly comfortable to allow you your reality of living in a soup of chemicals or whatever, atoms floating around, whatever it is, or you, the gray matter of the brain producing the illusion of consciousness, or whatever, it's fine. No defensiveness anymore and no negative feelings. This is why I liked the when Obama said, you don't need to be disagreeable to disagree, you don't need to become disagreeable when you disagree. The deeper implication is you're not identified with your mental position. He couldn't say that because nobody would understand what he's talking about. So, well, only some people would understand. There's awareness in the background, so presence or awareness is there while things happen in the foreground. The foreground can be your thoughts. The foreground can be your emotions. The foreground can be whatever is happening around you. And so your perceptions of whatever is happening outside, there's also you're not perceiving this through the screen of concepts or thoughts. You're perceiving through you are the awareness, not the thoughts. And even if a thought comes and says, that person looks weird, then you realize it's just a thought in your head, and when you finally communicating with that person, you can still be the awareness and communicate as awareness rather than communicate as if the thought, this person is weird, were the reality. You realize it's just a thought that came into the head, and you don't impose the thought on the person and then relate to that person as if it were true. And you say, and suddenly you're talking to this weird person. What are you going to? Everything, it'll distort everything. Or you want something, what the thought says, either this person could be helpful to me, or whatever the ego says. That's a thought. Be there as the spacious presence. Now the question is, yes, of course there can be presence while thoughts happen or emotions happen, including sadness or anger. But the questioner asks, it seems like you're describing a state in which there's no mental or emotional content. There's also the possibility of presence becoming so intensified at times that all thoughts and emotions become obliterated. This is very different from suppressing emotions or thoughts. It's simply that the presence that arises becomes so intense that they're just thoughts or emotions don't arise. And usually it could happen in a limit situation, as in existentialist philosophers call it, when life or death situation, it could happen that presence sometimes can become so intense, or it can become for no reason at all, it can happen. And you're simply sitting in your room and suddenly there's no thought whatsoever. There's no emotion. There's just an intense aliveness. It's not you haven't deadened yourself, because that is, sometimes people believe if you have no emotion, you're dead. You haven't deadened yourself. There's an intense aliveness. It's a different kind of aliveness than the emotion. A vibrantly alive field of intense consciousness. So that can arise sometimes, and it's beautiful. I sometimes spend periods of time without thought and without emotion, and it's beautiful. Nature, walking around nature, or with nothing particular to think about, why think? Or sitting in a cafe drinking a cup of coffee, why think? Be the alert presence. So you have the presence can be there without thought and emotion. At times that will happen. Or presence can be there as a background to whatever emotions or thoughts are there. So, and presence can be lost completely, in which case all you have is thoughts and emotions, and you will believe that you are the thought and the emotion. That's the unconscious state. So for us, it's important to be there as the emotions happen. And I suggest you work particularly with people, talking to people, exchange of opinions and viewpoints, observing aggression, observing defensiveness, observing negativity flowing into just because somebody has not the same opinion that you have. And then don't condemn yourself and say, oh, I shouldn't be feeling this. No, just again, observe that. Observe that suddenly you've become angry with this person. And instead of saying, oh dear, I've failed miserably in my spiritual practice. No, just say, okay, I'm just noticing that. You're no longer in it. You're already out of it when you notice it. So be compassionate with yourself. But the important thing is, you're aware. So we all know the famous joke about the person, when you tell the person, why are you so angry? The person says, I am not angry. And that's, of course, a typical example of somebody who doesn't know, has absolutely no awareness. In the middle of anger, denies that there's anger.
Thank you. just bought a bike.
Okay, that was Eckhart Tolle giving us a little talk on the relationship between thinking, emotions, and the field of presence, or the field of being. Okay, we're going over now to this time it's going to be Celine Dion, My Heart Will Go On. I think it's from the movie Titanic.
Open
Thank you. Good night.
That was Celine Dion singing My Heart Will Go On. Now we're going to the main spiritual exercise of the evening. And so I will be ringing the bell here in a minute. But it's strange. I had a file on my computer with all the different spiritual exercises that comes out of these teachings of self-inquiry. And somehow or other, I can't find the file. I hope I haven't crashed it. So there's just a few of the exercises I remember where to find them. But anyway, I'll be working on that between now and next week when I have this show again every Monday. All right, this one is it's by Master Muji, and it's entitled "The Best Mantra."
Can you honestly tell me that in your experience? That which we experience is for our growth.
Yes. Yes. I don't feel that this universe is vindictive. I think it is corrective. It offers you innumerable opportunities to somehow to step up to higher ground. If there seems to be punishment, then even that is an action of grace, which at the time we don't appreciate. Often you're saying thank you to the wrong guy, to what makes you feel sweet in the moment. You say thank you for your chocolate-flavored moments. But some things rub and squeeze and grind you that you don't say thank you for. But they alter your being in such a way that it brings wisdom into your experience, you see. And rarely we are thankful for that. Someone once asked me, not long ago, in fact, some friends are here too. We were just in Spain just now. And one man came and asked the interpreter next to me, ask Muji if he will give me a mantra. Can you give me a mantra, Muji?
Why did he want a mantra? Why did he want a mantra? I don't want a mantra.
No, wait.
No, sorry.
So I said to him, I shall tell you the best mantra, the universal mantra, the best mantra any being can say, not just Indians, a mantra for every being. Your mantra is, thank you. Just keep saying thank you. Don't explain, don't complain, just say thank you. Say thank you to existence. Thank you. Thank you. Muchas gracias. Merci beaucoup. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You don't have to justify it. And somehow your beingness comes alive. It's cleaned somehow. Every being, everyone who comes into your life, if you don't understand what they bring, you still say thank you. Just thank you. They kick you. You may not say thank you immediately. But somewhere inside you, you say, thank you. Just like this. See what happened.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that's the exercise for this evening. So try to do as much as possible between now and next Monday when the show comes on again. Now we're going back to Joss Gobran, and he's going to sing a song called Maya, M-A-I.
Guardarmi, non cercare di spiegare, Lo sapevo che finiva prima o poi. E solo ieri che dicevi quanto ti amo, ma era soltanto uno stato di agonia. Non c'è cosa più illusoria dell'amore. Non credi mai che possa capitare a te di ritrovarti sopra un filo di speranza, per poi crollare dentro questa oscurità. Adesso sembri così preoccupata, si direbbe che ora soffri più di me, ma non è vero, non mi hai mai nemmeno amato, altrimenti non andresti via così.
That was Josh Gobran with the song May, M-A-I, May. Now it's time to go back to, we're going back to Eckhart Tolle, and he's going to talk of the name of his talk is Perfect Definition of Love. So I think it's about human love.
Except through love in a relationship between a man and a woman. Isn't that what makes us whole again? How can one's life be fulfilled until that happens?
Is that true in your experience? Has this happened to you?
Not yet. But how could it be otherwise? I know that it will happen.
In other words, you're waiting for an event in time to save you. Is this not the core error that we've been talking about? Salvation is not elsewhere in place or time. It is here and now. Unless and until you access the consciousness frequency of presence, all relationships, and particularly intimate relationships, are deeply flawed and ultimately dysfunctional. They may seem perfect for a while, such as when you are in love, but invariably that apparent perfection gets disrupted as arguments, conflicts, dissatisfaction, and emotional or even physical violence occur with increasing frequency. It seems that most love relationships become love-hate relationships before long. Love can then turn into savage attack, feelings of hostility, or complete withdrawal of affection at the flick of a switch. This is considered normal. The relationship then oscillates for a while, a few months or a few years, between the polarities of love and hate, and it gives you as much pleasure as it gives you pain. It is not uncommon for couples to become addicted to those cycles. Their drama makes them feel alive. When a balance between the positive-negative polarities is lost and the negative-destructive cycles occur with increasing frequency and intensity, which tends to happen sooner or later, then it will not be long before the relationship finally collapses. It may appear that if you could only eliminate the negative or destructive cycles, then all would be well and the relationship would flower beautifully. But alas, this is not possible. The polarities are mutually interdependent. You cannot have one without the other. The positive already contains within itself the as yet unmanifested negative. Both are in fact different aspects of the same dysfunction. I am speaking here of what is commonly called romantic relationships, not of true love, which has no opposite because it arises from beyond the mind. Love as a continuous state is as yet very rare as conscious human beings. Brief and elusive glimpses of love, however, are possible whenever there's a gap in the stream of mind. The negative side of a relationship is, of course, more easily recognizable as dysfunctional than the positive one. And it is also easier to recognize the source of negativity in your partner than to see it in yourself. It can manifest in many forms: possessiveness, jealousy, control, withdrawal and unspoken resentment, the need to be right, insensitivity and self-absorption, emotional demands and manipulation, the urge to argue, criticize, judge, blame or attack, anger, unconscious revenge for past pain inflicted by a parent, rage, and physical violence. On the positive side, you are in love with your partner. This is at first a deeply satisfying state. You feel intensely alive. Your existence has suddenly become meaningful because someone needs you, wants you, and makes you feel special, and you do the same for him or her. When you are together, you feel whole. The feeling can become so intense that the rest of the world fades into insignificance. However, you may also have noticed that there is a neediness and a clinging quality to that intensity. You become addicted to the other person. He or she acts on you like a drug. You're on a high when the drug is available. But even the possibility or the thought that he or she might no longer be there for you can lead to jealousy, possessiveness, attempts at manipulation through emotional blackmail, blaming and accusing, fear of loss. If the other person does leave you, this can give rise to the most intense hostility or the most profound grief and despair. In an instant, loving tenderness can turn into a savage attack or dreadful grief. Where is the love now? Can love change into its opposite in an instant? Was it love in the first place, or just an addictive grasping and clinging?
Why should we become addicted to another person?
The reason why the romantic love relationship is such an intense and universally sought-after experience is that it seems to offer liberation from a deep-seated state of fear, need, lack, and incompleteness that is part of the human condition in its unredeemed and unenlightened state. There is a physical as well as a psychological dimension to this state. On the physical level, you are obviously not whole, nor will you ever be. You are either a man or a woman, which is to say, one half of the whole. On this level, the longing for wholeness, the return to oneness, manifests as male-female attraction, man's need for woman, woman's need for man. It is an almost irresistible urge for union with the opposite energy polarity. The root of this physical urge is a spiritual one, the longing for an end to duality, a return to the state of wholeness. Sexual union is the closest you can get to this state on the physical level. This is why it is the most deeply satisfying experience the physical realm can offer. But sexual union is no more than a fleeting glimpse of wholeness, an instant of bliss. As long as it is unconsciously sought as a means of salvation, you are seeking the end of duality on the level of form, where it cannot be found. You are given a tantalizing glimpse of heaven, but you are not allowed to dwell there and find yourself again in a separate body. On the psychological level, the sense of lack and incompleteness is, if anything, even greater than on the physical level. As long as you identify it with your mind, you have an externally derived sense of self. That is to say, you get your sense of who you are from things that ultimately have nothing to do with who you are. Your social role, possessions, external appearance, successes and failures, belief systems, and so on. This false mind-made self, the ego, feels vulnerable, insecure, and is always seeking new things to identify with, to give it a feeling that it exists. But nothing is ever enough to give it lasting fulfillment. Its fear remains. Its sense of lack and neediness remains. But then that special relationship comes along. It seems to be the answer to all the ego's problems and to meet all its needs. At least this is how it appears at first. All the other things that you derived your sense of self from before now become relatively insignificant. You now have a single focal point that replaces them all, gives meaning to your life, and through which you define your identity, the person you are in love with. You are no longer a disconnected fragment in an uncaring universe, or so it seems. Your world now has a center, the loved one. The fact that the center is outside you and that, therefore, you still have an externally derived sense of self does not seem to matter at first. What matters is that the underlying feelings of incompleteness, of fear, lack, and unfulfillment, so characteristic of the egoic state, are no longer there. Or are they? Have they dissolved? Or do they continue to exist underneath the happy surface reality? If in your relationships you experience both love and the opposite of love, attack, emotional violence, and so on, then it is likely that you are confusing ego attachment and addictive clinging with love. You cannot love your partner one moment and attack him or her the next. True love has no opposite. If your love has an opposite, then it is not love, but a strong ego need for a more complete and deeper sense of self, a need that the other person temporarily meets. It is the ego's substitute for salvation, and for a short time it almost does feel like salvation. But there comes a point when your partner behaves in ways that fail to meet your needs, or rather those of your ego. The feelings of fear, pain, and lack that are an intrinsic part of egoic consciousness but had been covered up by the love relationship now resurface. Just as with every other addiction, you are on a high when the drug is available, but invariably there comes a time when the drug no longer works for you. When those painful feelings reappear, you feel them even more strongly than before, and what is more, you now perceive your partner as the cause of those feelings. This means that you project them outward and attack the other with all the savage violence that is part of your pain. This attack may awaken the partner's own pain, and he or she may counter your attack. At this point, the ego is still unconsciously hoping that its attack or its attempts at manipulation will be sufficient punishment to induce your partner to change their behavior, so that it can use them again as a cover-up for your pain. Every addiction arises from an unconscious refusal to face and move through your own pain. Every addiction starts with pain and ends with pain. Whatever the substance you are addicted to, alcohol, food, legal or illegal drugs, or a person, you are using something or somebody to cover up your pain. This is why, after the initial euphoria has passed, there is so much unhappiness, so much pain in intimate relationships. They do not cause pain and unhappiness. They bring out the pain and unhappiness that is already in you. Every addiction does that. Every addiction reaches a point where it does not work for you anymore, and then you feel the pain more intensely than ever. This is one reason why most people are always trying to escape from the present moment and are seeking some kind of salvation in the future. The first thing that they might encounter if they focus their attention on the now is their own pain, and this is what they fear. If they only knew how easy it is to access in the now the power of presence that dissolves the past and its pain, the reality that dissolves the illusion, if they only knew how close they are to their own reality, how close to God. Avoidance of relationships in an attempt to avoid pain is not the answer either. The pain is there anyway. 3 failed relationships in as many years are more likely to force you into awakening than 3 years on a desert island or shut away in your room. But if you could bring intense presence into your aloneness, that would work for you too.
Can we change an addictive relationship into a true one?
Yes. Being present and intensifying your presence by taking your attention ever more deeply into the now. Whether you are living alone or with a partner, this remains the key. For love to flourish, the light of your presence needs to be strong enough so that you no longer get taken over by the thinker or the pain body and mistake them for who you are. To know yourself as the being underneath the thinker, the stillness underneath the mental noise, the love and joy underneath the pain is freedom, salvation, enlightenment. To disidentify from the pain body is to bring presence into the pain and thus transmute it. To disidentify from thinking is to be the silent watcher of your thoughts and behavior, especially the repetitive patterns of your mind and the roles played by the ego. If you stop investing it with selfness, the mind loses its compulsive quality, which basically is the compulsion to judge and so to resist what is, which creates conflict.
Okay, that was Eckhart Tolle talking about human love and the conflicts therein. Okay, we now go back to some more music. And this time it's Katherine Jenkins singing Love Never Dies.
Who knows when love begins? Who knows what makes it start? One day it's simply there, alive inside your heart. It slips into your thoughts, it infiltrates your soul. It takes you by surprise, then seizes full control. Try to deny it and try to protest, but love won't let you go. Once you've been possessed, love never dies. Love never falters. Once it has spoken, love is yours.
That was the lovely Catherine Jenkins singing Love Never Dies. well, we're getting kind of to the end of the show. So the next piece I have for you, I think, is going to be a guided meditation. It's not very long today. It's just 10 minutes. And I'm just looking for it up and down here. Let's see now. I think I've found it. Yeah, I'm still looking for her. Okay, I think it's this one here. Okay, found it. Okay, so here we go. It'll be about 10 minutes long. So it's a guided meditation. So take a comfortable position, sitting, lying. If you lie, you might fall asleep, and you'll probably find it better to close your eyes and just follow the instructions.
I want to take a few moments with you. Just be where you are, wherever this is, and just to do a bit of looking together again. I don't want to talk to you so that you think. Actually, this talking is not to produce thinking. It's more a recognition. It's something more energetic, more meditative. It is not to scratch your head. So I just want you just to sit for a moment. Don't raise your hood. There is an awareness here. Even if there is a sort of shimmering of thought, the energy of thought is present. There's no need to pay attention to that. Just be aware of that. But don't follow. Stay only as the awareness, which feels more like space. You do also. This awareness is not trying to get to another point or to any point. It's not trying to clear things up. It has no intention. There's only the feeling of presence. Watch this feeling inside yourself. Nobody put it there. This taste of presence. It's not a person. It's not an object. Even the subtlest sensations are appearing in it. You are not doing anything at all. Even listening is taking place spontaneously within yourself. Don't tie yourself to the mind or to any image. Stay only as aware. If thoughts come, don't say they should not come. Let them come. In the same way that they come, they will also go. But don't wait for their passing. Your awareness self is like space, pure space, in which all movements of consciousness and mind, names and forms, are simply occurring by themselves. You're not coming or going, but comings and goings are occurring in you. And intelligence is taking care of them. you cannot recognize yourself objectively, because you are subtler than any object. Just this space of awareness. You're ageless, unbound. There's nothing to do about what you're hearing. You're in a state of pure recognition only. Any idea that you need to do something to be that which is only an idea. But your belief in any idea will give life to it. This you don't have to do. You're not compelled. If there is some mental noise or some energetic noise, let it simply be there. Don't judge. It is not greater than you. Nothing can overwhelm you. Nothing can overwhelm you. Nothing can extend beyond you. You are the space in which all things manifest and play. You are the awareness of them. You can never be a casualty of what you perceive. Know this deep inside your being. You are not a process, but innumerable processes are flowing in you. Nothing can erase you or cover you up. These are just thoughts, but when believed in, they will bring to you a taste that you may or may not like. The idea you have about who you are is not you. You are beyond ideas. For this reason, you can perceive them. No feeling can contain you. For this reason, you can perceive them, you are aware of them. You are not a mood. Even the most sophisticated, elevated, spiritual mood arises only within you as a phenomenon. You are the witness of it. How can you lose this understanding, this insight? You're only being reminded of this. It cannot be given to you. In the same way, it cannot be taken from you. These are childish ideas.
Okay, that was our guided meditation for the evening. And now we come to the end of the show, so just a few things to remind you. You can access, you know, we're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's 103.1 FM. And you can access these by streaming on freakradio.org. And when the image of the aerial tower, radio aerial tower, comes up, you press the red button, and then you're on the air. And I have archived many of these shows on, what's it called again? For radio, Radio for All, that's it. radioforall.net, and the four is the letter four, or the number four. The Radio for All is number four, not the spelling. And when you get in there, there'll be a little search engine, so you put in the name of the show. This show is called The Awakening of the Self. My other show there is called Dr. Mike's Health and Wellness. So you'll get both shows there. My past shows were called Health and the Awakening of the Self. So whatever shows you want, you put in the name there and they'll be come up for you. Okay, and for those people who are interested in furthering their knowledge of spiritual awakening, I recommend that they go to a site called Buddha at the Gas Pump. Buddha at the Gas Pump. There, a young man, Rick Archer, he interviews over the years over 300 spiritual masters. So you're bound to connect with one of those masters. Some are female, some are male, and it's a good way to find a teacher that you relate to. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for joining me, and I look forward to you joining me again next week from 6 to 8 next Monday. Bye for the moment.
I travel from at orange up to center. Food for the brain, still a vibe, make me meditate. Hey, give me little of the grapes and pass me a Rizla. All right then, strictly highest of the highest, and not that me a feature. All right then, circle orange to seal them and flanker. All right yo, this a office and nobody arrest me for the